Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Ryan Hennessy of Picture This, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show, Ryan. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me back.
You've a new album coming soon and we'll talk to you about that, but you've also... But you're participating in our little summer series. You pick five songs that have meant something to you throughout your life. Will we kick off with the first pick? So this is one people might know. It's a song by Fionn Regan.
Yeah, it's a song called Dogwood Blossom. And I actually don't know much about Fionn Regan myself, to be honest. This is the only song I know. But it was a song that struck me when I was watching This Is England. The movie, I watched the film that was like a real seminal film for me when I was growing up. And they turned it into a series, and there was a really kind of stark kind of outro scene that this was the soundtrack to, and it always stuck with me, just the heaviness.
Yeah, and This Is England, for people who don't know it, it was a Shane Meadows thing about a gang of kind of working class young people growing up, I suppose, flirting with the skinhead culture and various things, and then he went back and did a few series taking them at different points in their lives, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that film was such a... That film kind of changed my life.
Why did it?
Because it got me into Fred Perry, Doc Martens. It got me into ska.
Yeah.
It got me into all that whole scene. It got me into subculture. I just wasn't kind of aware of all of these... the subculture of, say, the skinheads and the mods and all that. And it really got me into that. And then I've always been kind of like a wannabe mod ever since then. So it gave me so much culture that I wasn't aware of. And I think it really changed me. It got me into tattoos and everything. Like, it really kind of formed a big chunk of my personality, I think.
Yeah, wow, okay. So let's have a listen to it. So this is Fionn Regan. He's an Irish singer-songwriter, isn't he? And this is Dogwood Blossom.
You say that you're troubled and you always have been uncomfortable in your own skin. So you contemplate the riverbed, turn off the dark thoughts in your head. Darling, darling, that dam's gonna give. It's inevitable the way that you live.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very raw, very affecting. It brings me to your new album is called Parked Car Conversations, right?
Yeah.
So ye have released a single, Song to Myself, and a bit like that, very, 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 not musically like that, but a very simple, but it's a very, very raw song. You didn't kind of disguise anything in it. Like, I wish that people would like me more. I wish I wasn't so insecure. I wish I didn't compare myself like this. I know it's bad for my mental health. I wish I wasn't so scared of being alone. I wish I wasn't scared to start new conversations. I wish I was someone I'd like to be.
Yeah. When you hear that,
Sorry. Was that freaky for you there?
It was. It's weird to hear it read out. But it's so raw. It was so scary to release. It was genuinely like it was, I never had any intention of releasing the song with the band. It was just, I wrote that song as kind of an exercise to myself, as it was basically a diary entry that I was writing. Just in general, that I turned into a song of stuff that I was writing in a diary, in a journal that I was keeping, and I turned it into a song, and kept it as raw as possible because I just wanted to make myself uncomfortable almost with it, and sit with the thoughts, and I actually just accidentally played the voice note one day when I was looking for another song in the studio when I was in with Jimmy from the band. Because we were working on another song and I kind of was skipping past and I was like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to play that. And he was like, no, wait, what was that? And then I was like uncomfortably playing it for him. And he was like, the song is really important. Why were you not showing me this song? Like, people need to hear this. And I was just like, I don't know, because it's literally me bearing my soul in the most, just like, it's almost, it's uncomfortable, you know, it's too honest in a way. I was like, people, I don't know if I want people to hear this. But then I kind of realized that people hearing that is way more important than my discomfort with it. If that can give other people comfort, then that's much more important than me, my discomfort with it. I came to that point.
What was people's reaction to it?
Amazing. Amazing in terms of, like, I never take for granted when people say, you know, your music saved me. You know, I've heard that a lot and I don't take that lightly. When people say that, your music saved me, or, and I got that a lot with this song. This song saved me. I needed to hear this, and especially from young men, I think, because for me, I think I would be considered to be quite, like, if you see me on stage, I'm quite confident and overt. And
well, you seem quite confident now, and you're wearing a leopard skin jacket, a baker boy hat, a bandana scarf tied around your neck.
So you look like you're okay with yourself
in the moment.
And I am, you know, but I had to get to that point, I think, and it takes a considerable amount of work. But I think also, as I'm not always all right with myself, I don't think anybody constantly is. And I think that was kind of an important thing to get across, was you might see me and I will be confident and I'll carry myself in a confident way and dress a certain way and act a certain way. But that doesn't mean that's how I am 24/7. You know, there's a balance. And I think it was important for me to show that side of myself to people, and to particularly young men, from what I've seen, from messages I've received, where they've been like, and people that I know that wouldn't usually reach out about songs, they'd be always be supportive, but there was guys that I know that were reaching out being like, thanking me for releasing a song, you know, which is weird.
Yeah.
To be thanked for releasing a song, because it's like, I always found that a little bit weird.
Is that, so was that like at a point you were doing, I think we kind of were kind of talking about this the last time we spoke, you were doing therapy. Were those words written at a point where maybe you'd stripped yourself down to the kind of not rock bottom, but the stripped yourself right back? Is that what the process was like, and then rebuild?
Absolutely. That was at that, strip myself down is a great way of putting it. It was at that point, it was at like a peak of me figuring myself out, because I was able to zoom out at that point and actually be just brutally honest, to be able to say aloud, I wish that people would like me more. You know, I don't think, I'd never heard somebody say that, you know, and I know people feel that. I know everybody's probably felt that at a certain point, but to say it out loud gave me so much power within myself to be able to actually say that and be.
Do you think, if we don't push those things down into the dark corners, vocalize it, like,
totally,
just, if we all admit it to each other,
just being brutally honest, I think, is so liberating. Being brutally honest with yourself, and once you're brutally honest with yourself, I think you can be honest with anybody else, because, you know, we lie to ourselves a lot, or I did anyway, about how I felt. So to be able to say, I wish I wasn't so scared of being alone, or something like that, is quite liberating.
And we'll move back on to your songs in a minute. I just ask you, I'm interested, do you consider that you have the work done for now? Is the work a lifelong project, or do you feel stabilised now in where you're at in your mental and emotional health and stuff? Or
yeah, I do.
How's the work?
I feel it is a work in progress always, I think. I think it is a life's work. I don't think you're ever figured out. I think you can only untangle yourself to a certain point, and I think it will start to tangle up again, and you just have to be aware of it. So I think it's always a work in progress, but I do feel in an amazing place, kind of spiritually or emotionally or however you would put it. I feel a great sense of clarity in my life right now, because of the work I've done. You know, it's grueling. You have to do it, and I didn't do therapy, say, for the last year maybe, but then within the last 3 weeks I've done a few sessions.
Why did you want to tell me why you felt you had to go back?
I just wanted to make sure there was nothing, you know, there was nothing major that had happened or anything, or I wasn't feeling low. I just kind of was checking in. Maybe there was something subconsciously, you know, that made me do it.
And maybe as well, you're kind of, I suppose you're in part of that cycle now. For musicians, there's a cycle where you kind of go to ground and then you're coming back out.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be hugely exposed now, starting today, I guess, and like, you do very big gigs, you're hugely popular, and that doesn't solve everyone's problems, does it? Like, it just makes them bigger.
They're very separate. I always thought it would solve problems, you know. If I go on stage,
does all that love you get, like, five nights in the O3, was it three nights?
We did five nights.
Does all that love help at all? No.
It does. I think it does, actually. But it doesn't... You have to kind of create your own love, you know, and happiness. You have to learn to love yourself, because that's the thing at that point. I think in 2019, when we did the five nights, you're standing in front of, I think, whatever it was, 60,000 people over five nights, and they all were showing love. But at that time, I didn't actually love myself at that time. But now I do. So... Okay. It's amazing. I feel it more intensely now because I love myself. So we've just played festivals all over Europe all summer. So we've been just out and just feeling this connection with the audience. And there's a layer there that's been taken out through self-love that I can feel love.
So you were a bit numb to it all before, yeah?
I don't think
you
I was
behind
numb
the
to
screen,
it.
Were you?
I wasn't numb to it. I was scared of it, I think.
Yeah.
I was scared of it. I was scared of the love.
So you can dive in now, yeah?
Yeah, I can accept it now.
It must
really
be
nice.
Fun then, is
yeah,
it? Yeah,
it's the best. It's the best feeling ever.
It's amazing. It? Yeah.
It really is. Like, like we have a joke within the band when people ask us what it's like, and we say, imagine the best thing ever. It's better than that, you know.
Really? Yeah.
Because it is. It's just, and I'm so grateful that I get to feel that.
And then what about when you walk off? Then does the air suddenly come out of the balloon? Then
yeah, that's the tough part. That is the tough part, because if you see me on stage and see me off stage, people have often said I'm two different people. I don't agree with that. I don't really like that comparison of, oh, you're two different people. You're an alter ego on stage. I'm not. I actually think I'm probably the purest version of myself on stage, the most kind of distilled and free version.
Yeah.
And off stage, I'm quite reserved. Not reserved, but I'm a bit like, I'm quiet for sure. So for me, going from that kind of raucous 60,000 people and all that energy and giving that energy back and then coming off stage, I'm quite relaxed, and it is tough. It is tough to kind of, I'll never forget when we played the RDS stadium in 2018. We played to 35,000 people, and 5 minutes after being on stage, I was standing in a hotel room by myself, because we were just carted off instantly because we had to get out to beat mm-hmm. to beat the crowd. And I remember that just being like, this is insane. This is not, this
what
is
do,
not
what
natural.
Do you do?
I literally booked a holiday.
Yeah.
There and then, to be like, I have to leave tomorrow and just go. And we went on a band holiday just to be together, because it was like, I can't just go home now after that. That was too intense. Like, that's, to be the focal point of that much energy is insane. You know, it's crazy. So you can't just go and be standing in a hotel room with your ear ringing 5 minutes later. It's insanity.
Yeah. No wonder so many people in your business go mad. Really,
I know.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's interesting you talk about how people saying that, you know, that song saved me. And like, you know, when we're kids, I think particularly, like, a song can save your life. It can save your day. But you were very late coming to music, weren't you? Because the next song you've chosen is by Luke Kelly, and this was the first song you ever sang.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, that was, I only sang for the first time when I was 18. I had never sang before, not even, you know, around the house in my room or in the shower, wherever people sing. I wasn't doing that. I just never did it. I always, like we touched on the last time we spoke, I wrote poetry from the age of like 6 or 7. So that was kind of, I think, my years of learning to be a songwriter without realizing it. And then when I was 18, I sang for the first time because I took up music as a subject in school, and I didn't realize you had to do a practical exam. And it came to that, and I was like, well, I can't play an instrument. I couldn't play an instrument at that time. And then they were like, you're going to have to sing. So I remember being at home and being in my room and knowing that I had to go into the school the next day and sing, and I'd never sang before. And my dad was downstairs, and I remember thinking, right, I'm going to have to go down and sing for my dad first to get, you know, that'll be the first hurdle. And if he thinks it's okay, then it'll be okay. And I remember walking downstairs and walking by the sitting room door like 5 times. I couldn't bring myself to go in to say, can I sing for you? Because I was just so nervous. I feel nervous now. I feel the nerves that I had then, because it's still palpable. And I went in and I asked him, could I sing? And he was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, this is random. I've never heard you express any interest in music. Go for it. Yeah. And I was like, okay. And then I made him close his eyes and I closed my eyes.
Yeah.
And I sang Come My Little Son by Luke Kelly. And I remember just not wanting to open my eyes because I was so terrified. And then I remember him just being blown away and just being like, where did that come from? Like, where has this come from? This is insane. He was like, that was, he thought it was incredible. And
so you might never have sung if it wasn't for having to do that practical.
Yeah.
Literally, sliding door moment.
Absolutely, yeah. And I actually got kicked out of my French class, so I had to pick music.
Okay.
You know, so it was a real, I could have, you know, a bit of misbehaviour led me to an amazing life, I think.
And how did you come across Luke Kelly and the Dubliners then? Was that through your father or...?
No, that was actually... The Dubliners were never played in my house growing up. I don't think so. Maybe they were. I just wasn't very tuned into music, so maybe they were. I was just interested in football and clothes. But I went down to my local Extravision when they were still around in a tie. And I used to go down... When I was around 15, 16, I went down and I used to just pick CDs off the rack by their cover, whatever kind of struck me. And there was a CD of Luke Kelly, the performer, like a kind of collaborative CD of all of the songs that he sung. And it was a photo of him on the front with a black background and his kind of head tilted back, eyes closed, and this big ginger hair. And I just found it so striking. I had no idea who it was. And I just looked at it and I was like, I need to figure out who this is. So I bought it and I went home and put it in to the CD player, and I was just instantly transformed and transported to another place that I had never been before through music. Just the songs and his voice just really moved me. At that time, I was just blown away. I was really blown away. I don't know how I missed the Dubliners for 15 years of my life. Yeah. I don't know how I did, but I did. And it just spoke to my soul, I think.
Okay, let's have a listen. So this is Come My Little Son.
Son, and I will tell you what we'll do. Undress yourself and get into bed, and the tale I'll tell to you. It's all about your daddy. He's a man you seldom see, for he's had
the Dubliners there, Luke Kelly singing, and that's Come My Little Son, and that is the second song choice of Ryan Hennessy of Picture This. It's funny, even though that's like very much a, you know, in the ballad folk tradition, there's a punk rock kind of heart to him and to them, isn't there?
Absolutely.
You mentioned you were only interested in sport and clothes when you were 18. So you were a sport though, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. That was all I did. I think, when you hear people say all I did when I was younger was play football, like it was literally all I did. As in, I didn't learn how to swim. I didn't learn how to ride a bike till I was like 15. I didn't learn anything. I didn't know anything about music. I'd never seen all of these iconic films. I was just playing football. That was it. Like,
were you good?
I was all right. I played at a decent level. You know, I wasn't anything amazing, but I loved it. I think my brother was probably a better footballer than me, and my sisters, to be fair. But I just loved it. I still do love it. But that was my life, was just football.
And you see, we were kind of a lot of the time to simplify things, like if you're a sports guy, a lot of the time that's your kind of tribe.
Yeah.
And then the music kids, the weird kids, can tend to be a different kind of tribe. So did you hop tribes then? Midstream,
I think I've always just been a bit of a lone wolf, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because, you're so right about the tribe thing. Because I remember, like, if I was walking down the school hallway and I seen a guy with a guitar, I'd look at him like he had two heads. Like, where are you going with that? Like, come on, I'd be walking with a gear bag, and I'm sure he was looking at me the same, being like, really, you're going to play football?
But
I think I've always been kind of just on my own, in a way. I've got a great group of friends, but they actually were amazing in terms of like all my friends that I grew up playing football with. They're all the biggest Picture This fans, you know. Yeah.
That's been really nice. Were they surprised, like when your fellow jocks, we'll call them, were they surprised when you turned into this flamboyant musician creature?
I think they were. When it comes to music, I've always been flamboyant and I've always been my own thing. And I've always dressed differently, I guess, especially to my group, because they'd all be, you know, at a certain point, we'd all be walking around in tracksuits and whatever, your club wear. But there was a certain point where I broke off and started walking around the tie in leather pants, you know. And I think that in a tie especially, it's not, you don't see a lot of people walking around in leather pants and leopard print and all of that. But I just loved it. And so that happened at a certain point. So they were definitely surprised about the music. But
does that take a bit of guts in a tie?
It does. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. You were saying that you bring that the sports mindset and the music mindset are not like completely different, that you bring a lot of the stuff you learned in sport to the music.
Yeah, absolutely. I see so many parallels in kind of every aspect. In preparation, I see it mostly in terms of I won't play a show without warming up my vocal, and I won't play a show without warming down my vocal after. Warming your vocals down is actually the most important part, which was always my least favourite part after playing a game was a warm down. I was always like, really? I want to get out of here.
Yeah.
And warming up. I was never great for warming up either, to be fair, but I see a lot of that. And I also, to go back to clothes, there was also that moment where you put on the boots and you put on your kit and you're in game mode.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. And I feel that same thing in the dressing room when I put on what I'm about to wear on stage. I'm like, right, it's game mode now. I'm going out to do exactly, it feels the exact same. Putting on a kit and going out, right, I'm going out onto the pitch now to give it my all. And it's the same putting on whatever I'm wearing, a suit or whatever. Right, I'm going out now to give it my all. It kind of puts me into the mind frame.
Do you miss playing football and being in a team and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I do. I miss it all the time. Yeah. I especially miss it when I come back to watch my team, you know. My team is Clamullion FC from Inatai. That's the estate that I grew up in. And that's the team. That's where all my friends, all my best friends still play with the team, you know. And I try and get back and see the matches and stay involved in the club as much as I can.
But you're not really the brothers.
It doesn't feel like that, yeah. But it's all the people that I played on the team, you know, they're all still there. But I do feel kind of like I almost don't have a right in a weird way, you know, to be a part of it anymore. So I try and stay involved in, like, picture this. I designed the kit that they're wearing this season with my good friend Paul Galvin. We designed the kit together, so that was really nice.
Yeah.
And picture this as the sponsor of the kit. So, you know, I'm trying to stay involved in the club as much as I can. And my dad runs the club.
Consultant.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, your dad runs it, yeah?
My dad runs the club, yeah.
Okay. Right, third choice, Bob Dylan, Boots of Spanish Leather. You're not a Bob Dylan fan.
I'm not, no. But this is my favourite song ever.
Really?
Yeah. So it's, I'm not a Bob Dylan fan. And I think it's quite cliche, isn't it, to have a Bob Dylan song in your five favourite songs of all time. It's a bit obvious. But I'm not a Dylan fan, no. I've never been. I appreciate him, you know. I appreciate this song. But I wouldn't call myself a Dylan fan.
I'm the same. I've tried kind of down the years. There's probably a dozen songs that I think are amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never really got into the whole depths of Dylan, you know.
I'm exactly the same. I think you put it perfectly there. I've tried. I've tried so many times.
Because everyone says, you're not into Dylan, you got to be into Dylan. He's the man.
Yeah, I've tried my best multiple times with him and with Springsteen and a couple of people like that, where you're almost told you have to like them.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I don't.
Yeah, I can't get the Springsteen thing.
No.
Yeah. So why Boots of Spanish Leather? What is it about this song?
It just, that was another thing with where I went down to Extravision and bought a CD just off the cover. I can't remember what the cover even was now, but I remember putting it in and playing it. And for some reason, Boots of Spanish Leather was not the first song, but the CD skipped to it. I remember that happening. And then it playing and just being blown away by the story. I was just so in the story, I remember. I remember feeling like I was right in the middle of the story. I wasn't passive. I felt like I was part of the song as I was listening to it. Which is always an amazing moment, that kind of transportation, like I said, with Luke Kelly as well.
Well, maybe that's the genius of Dylan, that you can see in all his work. Okay, Boots of Spanish Leather.
I might be gone a long old time, and it's only that I'm asking, here's something I can send you to remember me by, to make your time more easy passing. Oh, how can you ask me again? it only brings me sorrow. This same thing I would want today, I will want again tomorrow.
Yeah, you see, there's no doubt when he brings you in, he's transcendent, isn't he?
It's like, unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's, yeah. That's a moment of music there. The next song you chose is Oasis, but no, this is from the kind of their latter period, maybe when Liam decided he wanted to write some songs.
Yeah.
And but you picked Liam's song, Songbird.
Yeah, I did. I love, he's only wrote like three Oasis songs, just Songbird, Little James, and another song. But I just love the naivety of it. I love the simplicity of it. You can just tell he's not a songwriter, but I love it. I just love how simple it is. It's almost childlike. And I've always just loved it. I love naivety in music.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so pure and it's so innocent, which are all words you would never associate with Liam Gallagher, you know, but when it comes to songwriting, it's tender and it's, there's just a beautiful naivety to it. It's 2.5 minutes long. It's just simple. And I really love it. It's my favourite Oasis song ever.
Okay, here's Oasis Songbird.
A man can never dream these kind of things, especially when she came and spread her wings, whispered in my ear the things I'd like. Then she flew away into the night. Gonna write a song so she can see, give her all the love she gives to me. Talk about that have yet to come. Never felt this love from anyone.
So are you a Liam person more than an old person?
I am a Liam guy, yeah. Yeah, Liam's my idol. Always has
Is
been.
Is he, yeah?
Yeah, always
have you met
has
him?
Been. No, I've never met him, but just a couple of weeks ago we were playing Mad Cool Festival in Spain, in Madrid, and he was headlining as well. And I stood and watched him. We stood and watched him, the band, and when he was getting towards the end of the set, I knew he was kind of getting towards the end of it. And we ran to the back of the stage because I'm still a super fan as well. I never lost that thing, you know, that some people become a bit serious when they get into music and they're a bit like, oh, I'm not a fan of anybody. I'm still a super fan of Oasis and of Man United and of all of these things. So I ran to the back of the stage and just watched him, just seeing him in person, like as close as me and you are, just seeing him in the flesh, you know, I felt my knees go. You know, go weak in that kind of fanfare thing. He came off stage and jumped into a van and sped off into the distance, and that was enough for me. I don't need to talk to him after that, you know.
Really, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Your final choice, I was expecting a bit of Snow Patrol. You have a Snow Patrol tattoo, don't you?
I do have a Snow Patrol tattoo, yeah. It says, "This isn't everything you are," which is one of their lyrics.
Yeah.
One of their songs. Snow Patrol are my favourite Irish band ever. I think they're incredible. We were supposed to open for them one stage, but Nathan, the guitarist, broke his wrists when we arrived, just as we arrived to the venue. We were supposed to open for them in Europe.
Okay, must have been pleased with
and,
him.
And yeah, I've never forgiven him since. But
And what's the significance of having "This isn't everything you are" written on your body?
I love that sentiment. This isn't everything you are. Nothing is everything you are, you know. And I think I struggled with that a lot in my life, of kind of putting myself in a box, you know. And it's like, why would I do that? I'm a multifaceted human being, as everybody is. And I think it's also a reminder of when you're in a state of sadness, that this isn't everything you are, this isn't forever. It's that kind of reminder. And it's an amazing song, amazing band.
Yeah. But your last song is actually by the Eagles. But I'm not going to say no, I never really got into the Eagles, because there's loads of people texting in saying, listen to this, Bruce Springsteen, listen to Magic, it's a game changer, you have to be into Dylan, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not happy with us. But the Eagles, are you an Eagles fan?
Yeah, big Eagles fan.
Okay.
Absolutely love them. Just growing up, that was always played in the car and in the house. I seen them recently with my dad and in the Aviva, and it was, I think, the best show I've ever seen. It was. I wasn't expecting it to be, because they're a lot older now, so I was kind of expecting it to be whatever. But just, they were on unbelievable form, in unbelievable voice, and just, it was breathtaking at times.
And is this a thing you and your dad have, the Eagles?
Yeah, it is.
Kind of a link to him.
Yeah.
You're absolutely. Very close to your dad, are you?
Yeah, I am. I am indeed, yeah. Yeah, I owe everything to him and to my family in general, you know.
Yeah.
And even like, speaking of like This Is England, you know, and Oasis and all of that, that's all from my brother. I was just copying my older brother, being like, I saw that he liked This Is England, saw that he liked Oasis, he had tattoos, all of that thing as well, you know. So I think
is he actually the cool one in the family?
He is, yeah. Unfortunately for me, he is the cool one. He reminds me of that very often as well. Yeah. But yeah, I think, yeah, my family, I'm so informed by my family. And when I think of the Eagles, I think of just being young and being in the back seat and driving and just hearing these amazing songs, you know. And yeah, it just reminds me of an amazing time in my childhood. I always associate the Eagles with family and togetherness and all of those things.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? As we were talking about this a bit last week, but it's those moments in between the moments, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Sitting in the back of the car and that playing.
Absolutely.
You're all there together.
Yeah, that's everything.
Killing each other 2 minutes later.
Yeah, exactly.
They are the things the kids remember, for anyone who's worrying today about making memories and stuff. Okay, so we'll go out on this. This is the Eagles and Lying Eyes. You used to mishear the lyrics of this. Yeah,
I thought it was lion eyes, as in the animal.
Yeah,
and as a kid, and I was always like, "That's interesting." But it was like a naivety of like, lion eyes. That's kind of cool. And then I only realized, like, probably 10 years ago, that it's actually lying eyes.
That is a very bitter song.
Yeah, it actually is. Yeah, it's the opposite meaning.
Okay, so listen, the album Park Car Conversations is out on September 29th, and you're touring across Ireland from October 19th. Yeah, so people can go to Picture This website or whatever.
Yeah, picturethismusic.com. There's a handful of tickets left for in Dublin. Yeah, we're doing 2 nights in Dublin, 2 nights in Belfast, 2 nights in Kerry. There's a handful of tickets left.
Okay, well, listen, good luck with it all. Mind yourself.
And
Ryan Hennessy, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
To talk to you again. Here's the Eagles and Lying Eyes.
But he knows where she's going as she's leaving. She is headed for the cheating side of town. You can't.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.